Die sind gleich aufeinander.
Ja.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Sudanana Bajana Ranjana Jasudanana Bajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Koti Vaishnavinda ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami ki jai, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki
jai,
Gaura Prabhupada. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya, Jai Nityananda, Jai Advaita Chandra, Jai Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jai
Jai Sri Chaitanya, Jai
Advaita
Chandra, Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya, Jai Nityananda, Jai Advaita Chandra, Jai Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
So, since I'm always struggling with my voice, Panagovinda Prabhu has very kindly agreed to read all of these verses for me and then No, you read all the translations. And then we just recite the last verse, right? In Bengali, yeah? You should recite it. You're Bengali, you should recite the verse.
Prathamikare Krishna Purusha Avatar Seita Purushai Trivida Pakar In the beginning, Krishna incarnates himself as the Purusha avatar or Vishnu incarnations. These are the three types. These are of three types. Up to this verse, the many types of expansions have been described. Now the manifestations of the Lord's different potencies will be described. Vishnustu Trini Rupani purushakhani ato vidhu ekam tu mahata srishti ditiyam tu andha sanstitam tritiyam sarvabhutastam tani jnata bhimuchyate. Vishnu has three forms called Purushas. The first, Mahavishnu, is the creator of the total material energy, Mahat. The second is Garbhadakshayi, who is situated within each universe. And the third is Kshiradakshayi, who lives in the heart of every living being. He who knows these three becomes liberated from the clutches of Maya. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This verse appears in the Loghu Bhagavatamrita Purva Khanda 2.9, where it has been quoted from the Sattata Tantra. Ananna Sakti Madhe Krishna Sakti Pradhan. Iccha Sakti Jena Sakti Krira Sakti Nam. Krishna has unlimited potencies, out of which three are chief: willpower, the power of knowledge, and the creative energy. 253. Iccha Shakti Pradhan Krishna, Iccha is Sarvakarta. Jena Shakti Pradhan Vasudeva Adhishtata. The predominator of the willing potency is Lord Krishna. For by His supreme will, everything comes into existence. In willing, there is a need for knowledge, and that knowledge is expressed through Vasudeva. Iccha gena kriya bina nahaya srijana. Tinera tin sakti meli prapancha rachana. There is no possibility of creation without thinking, feeling, willing, knowledge and activity. The combination of the supreme will, knowledge and action brings about the cosmic manifestation. Krira Shakti Pradhan Sankarsana Balaram. Prakrita Prakrita Srishti Karena Nirman. Lord Sankarsan is Lord Balaram. Being the predominator of the creative energy, he creates both the material and the spiritual world. Ahankarer Adhishtata Krishner Ichchaya. Goloka Vaikuntha Srije Chit Shakti Dharaya. The original Sankarsan, Lord Balaram, is the cause of both the material and the spiritual creation. He is the predominating deity of egotism. And by the will of Krishna and the power of the spiritual energy, he creates the spiritual world, which consists of the planet Goloka, Vrindavan, and the Vaikuntha planets. Jadapi asrijja nitta chit shakti bilasa. Tathapi sankarsana ichchai tahara prakasa. Although there is no question of creation as far as the spiritual world is concerned, The spiritual world is nonetheless manifested by the supreme will of Sankarsana. The spiritual world is the abode of the pastime of the eternal spiritual energy. Sahasrapatram Kamalam Gokulaikam Mahatpadam Tatkarnikaram Tadhama Tad Anantamsa Sambhavam. Gokula, the supreme abode and planet, appears like a lotus flower that has a thousand petals. The world of that lotus is the abode of the Supreme Lord Krishna. This lotus-shaped supreme abode is created by the will of Lord Ananta. Purport. This verse is quoted from the Brahma Samhita 5.2. Maya dara sri jete ho brahmandero gana. Jara rupa prakriti nahe brahmanda karana. By the energy of the material energy, by the energy of the material energy, by the agency of the material energy, this same Lord Sankarsana creates all the universes. The dull material energy, known in modern language as nature, is not the cause of the material universe. Jara haite srishti nahe ishar shakti bine. Tahate Sankarsana kare shaktiro adhane. Without the Supreme Personality of Godhead's energy, dull matter cannot create the cosmic manifestation. Its power does not arise from the material energy itself, but it's endowed by Sankarsana. 261. Ishwarer shakte srishti karaye prakriti. Loha jena agni shakte paye daha shakti. Dull matter alone cannot create anything. Material energy produces the creation by the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Iron itself has no power to burn, but when iron is placed in fire, it is empowered to burn. Okay, now is today's verse. You want to leave?
Yes, I can show you this one. Joy. Is it possible to close that door? Is it possible to close that door?
Yes.
You don't mind? Okay. I'm feeling the air. Eto hi vishvasya cha bhijayoni. Rama mukunda purushah pradhanam. Anvya bhuteshu vilakshanasya. Jnanasya cheshat imau prano. Balaram and Krishna are the original efficient and material causes of the material world. As Mahavishnu and the material energy, they enter into the material elements and create the diversities by multi-energies. Thus they are the cause of all causes. This verse is quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam. Oh, sorry. Om Jnana Tabandas Granam Janaslaki Jaksuran Mutam Mina Dismay Sri Gurave Namaha. So this section of Chaitanya Charitamrita is Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami. And previous to this, Lord Chaitanya instructed Rupa Goswami. These conversations, I guess they're not conversations, they're instructions, are very significant. Because I was actually just reflecting today how Lord Chaitanya had so many conversations. He had conversations with Raman Narai, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. But his conversations with Rupa and Sanatana Goswami were unique, because Lord Chaitanya was very, he was very, very much presenting himself as Guru, as the spiritual master of Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. But generally, like with Ramananda Rai, he would say, "You speak. Let me hear you speak, you know, all this philosophy." Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he listened very submissively for 7 days. And then, of course, he refuted. But here, Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami really submitted themselves to Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya took charge of them out of love as their spiritual master. And that transmission of love, pure bhakti, and the instructions of our Vedic philosophy and Gaudiya Vaishnavism really penetrated into them. And they were so incredibly empowered to do what they did, to actually expand the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. The conversation that Lord Chaitanya had with Rupa Goswami in Prayag for 10 days, that basically planted the seed for his entire work of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is the Bible, the standard scripture textbook of what is bhakti that we all are scientifically following the process and understanding the process. Very nuanced and scientific presentation, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Incredibly scientific, actually. Starting with the first chapter, the first wave, second wave, third wave, fourth wave. Talks about the ontology in very much detail, which is very powerful, because at the time, you know, the Mayavad school was very strong, you know, in Navadvip and all over India, actually. And the common conception of Vaishnavism at the time was sentimentalism. Like, I was actually reading the conversation of, I can't remember who it was, who informed Prakashananda Saraswati. But when Lord Chaitanya was visiting, where was Lord Chaitanya visiting? Where Prakashananda Saraswati was? I can't remember. Well, where Prakashananda Saraswati, Lord Chaitanya was visiting, what is the city? That city? Varanasi. So when he was in Varanasi, one of his associates, you know, was speaking to Prakashananda Saraswati. He was glorifying him. And Prakashananda Saraswati's response about his conception of Lord Chaitanya was, you know, yeah, he's very sentimental. That was the only thing he could say. He's dancing and chanting, and this is what you know. So this contribution of Rupa Goswami, of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, was actually very significant, because it changed the entire landscape of what is bhakti and the conception of bhakti all across India, and of course all over the world, that it is not sentimentalism. It is a very scientific. Now, if we think about scientific, you know, in the scientific method, you have, you can validate the hypotheses if you undergo these different steps and you get the end result that you're looking for, and you can validate that this is actually true. So from that sense, from that scientific sense, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is very scientific. And if you follow this process, then the results will be Of course, the process that's being described is beyond the intellect and logic in that way. But the process is that of receiving mercy. And then his conversation with Sanatana Goswami, which is what we're hearing now, that's also very significant, because Sanatana Goswami, he presented some very monumental scriptures that we read, Brihad Bhagavatamrita. It's very significant. And Rupa Goswami, after Sanatana Goswami wrote Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he wrote Laghu Bhagavatamrita. And actually, the teachings, it's actually very interesting how, why does Krishna not write these scriptures himself? Right? He plants a seed in one of his devotees, and then his devotee. So this is a perfect example. Lord Chaitanya planted the seed in Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami, he expanded that in his Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And then Rupa Goswami took Brihad Bhagavatamrita and he expanded that through, he distilled it through Laghu Bhagavatamrita. And actually many of the teachings that Lord Chaitanya is giving here to Sanatana Goswami are not found in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Actually found in Laghu Bhagavatamrita. So, but I was reflecting on this. Why is this? And I came to the realization that bhakti is always flowing. Right? Then bhakti is not stagnant. It is not that we receive only. Is we receive and then we give. So it's a flow. It's a constant flow, right? And that's why when we pray to the Lord, I was actually reflecting on this also recently, we don't say, my dear Lord, please love me. We don't pray like that. We say, my dear Lord, bless me. Because what is the blessing? The blessing is to be connected to this flow. Right, we become the instrument of love. Like, you cannot receive love unless you give love, right? That is the blessing. We're receiving to give. So, the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is also very significant because it's the exposition of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our Bible also, our main Bible, I would say. And Bhagavad Gita kind of lands in the Bhagavatam, and then the Bhagavatam goes to Chaitanya Charitamrita, but the Chaitanya Charitamrita is simply a glorification of the Bhagavatam. So the Bhagavatam is in the center. So just speaking a little bit earlier about the significance of Sanatana and Rupa Goswami and how their interactions with Lord Chaitanya were actually quite unique. And it's actually very instructive to all of us in how they approached Lord Chaitanya. First of all, they approached Lord Chaitanya they were coming from the perspective that they were very fallen. And many of Lord Chaitanya's associates were very humble, but their humility is exceptional. Because they took advantage of their position and saw the opportunity to present themselves in the most low way, right? Like, because the understanding is that they were serving lichas, right? But the reason why they're serving the lichas is to actually to protect the Vaishnavas, right? Because if they didn't, they would not have that influence. With the Kazi and the kings, the Muslim emperors and leadership at the time. So to protect them, they actually had to take the position to become a servant. But they took that opportunity to present a very extreme form of humility, where, to the extent where they were concerned about devotees touching them, even the associates of the Lord. Like even amongst the associates of the Lord, they were afraid that they would be touched, or that they would get in the way, and they'd always be always in the background. And that famous story of Lord Sanatana Goswami, he didn't want to touch accidentally one of the priests in Jagannath Puri. So he walked on the burning hot sand all the way to Puri, and he had blisters on his feet. And so what's instructive about this, I feel, is that whatever negative perception or circumstances we might find ourselves in, if we read in the scriptures saying that, if you do X, Y, and Z, you're very fallen, and if you've done that, instead of hiding from it, you say, yes, this is an incredible opportunity for me to express my humility. Guess what? I did this thing, and that makes me lowest of the low. Actually, I was actually mentioning this to someone recently. Bilva Mangala Thakur, the first verse of his book, Krishna Karnamrita, he pays obeisances to Chintamani, who is his prostitute guru. Of course, there's double meanings here, but it wasn't like, first of all, if that was our history, we would never tell anyone, perhaps. Or maybe, tell someone in confidence. Or maybe we would stick it in the book in the middle somewhere, or at the end. But he actually is like, hey, guess what? The first verse of the entire book, this is the only book he's ever written, he just kind of like announces to the whole world for all time to come that, nothing to hide, right? So this is the example that, and look, Queen Kunti in the Bhagavatam, in her prayers, Janmaisha Shuddhi Shibir Edaman Edaman Tapita, that all of these things that are qualifications are actually disqualifications in bhakti. So if we have these things, then we should be like, oh my gosh, I got a long way ahead. But if I'm a prostitute and I have this horrible history of killing people and drug abuse, like Jaga and Madhai, they are humility. I mean, if you read some of the other books that we don't typically read, like Nityananda Charitamrita, and there's other books, Chaitanya Bhagavat, you can read some of these stories of Jaga and Madhai. They really took advantage of their fallenness to communicate and to express such extreme humility that it actually crack your heart open, and you feel like the love of God, just kind of like that little fireworks in your heart. And when you read some of these things, like we were reading the story of Jagai and Madhai, they were repenting on the banks of the Ganga, and because this is what Lord Chaitanya instructed them to make bathing ghats, right, to as a service to the pilgrims there. So they were doing this, and then because they committed so many violent acts in their life and hurt so many people, and they're just feeling there's no hope for us. And so Lord Chaitanya said, "This is your salvation. You just do this." And so sometimes these people who are hurt, by Jagannath and Madhai, they would throw rocks at them, and so they'd pick up these rocks, and they'd say, "Thank you. Thank you so much." They pick up the rock that was thrown at them, they carry it, and they bring it back to them. Say, please, throw it again. And so we see in the lives of these, of course, Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, they actually never committed anything. There's no sinful activity. But the realization I had is that they took advantage that it's the exact opposite, Jamaisha Shuddhi Shibir, these things, the qualifications for bhakti is what's so bad about us. That is our qualification. Does that make sense? Like, if we can think of a million things bad about us, that makes us extremely qualified for bhakti. My Guru Maharaj, he often gives the example that bhakti is like you have those iron filings and you have the magnet. The bigger the magnet and the smaller the iron filings, the greater the attraction. So he said this mood of humility is what actually it accentuates, magnifies this attraction between the Lord and the living entity. That love of Godhead becomes within our reach. So the other thing I was thinking about this morning was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Thakur. He gave extensive commentaries to Chaitanya Bhagavat and Chaitanya Charitamrita, correct? Both. He gave extensive commentaries. I mean, like thousands of pages for both. And, of course, we have other works, Chaitanya Mangala, right, by Lochan Das Thakur. And then there's also some other books out there on the life of Lord Chaitanya. But Srila Prabhupada specifically chose Chaitanya Charitamrita to translate, right? Even though his Guru Maharaj. And if you think about it, in some respects, the Leela, the pastimes, are more extensive in some of these other books, Chaitanya Bhagavat. Right, even though it emphasized different parts of Lord Chaitanya's life, the earlier part of Lord Chaitanya's life. But from a Leela standpoint, there is actually more Leela in some of these other books. So Srila Prabhupada, my realization, kind of my experience, and from what I've heard, is that Srila Prabhupada specifically chose Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's considered to be the authoritative manifestation of the principles of Lord Chaitanya's life and his legacy and what he brought to this world. It is the paramount authority on Lord Chaitanya and his teachings. And my realization is that in the beginning, in the Adi Leela, right, the first 5-8 chapters, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, he unpacks the entire philosophy of Gaudiya Vaishnavism with the rasa, right, the rasa of Lord Chaitanya, that sweetness. So powerfully that every time I read the fifth chapter, I think it's the fifth chapter, where Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, he speaks about the inconceivable love of the Lord's devotees and the Lord, culminating in the love of Srimati Radharani and Krishna. And every time I read that chapter, I mean, it's hundreds of verses, that chapter, but every time I read that chapter, it's like, oh my God, it can't go any deeper than that. And then the next verse, like, oh my God, it just got even deeper. And the next verse is, oh my God, it got even more deeper. It's just, he just goes so deep. And it's just like, you feel like you're just going to collapse. There's just the love is just so inconceivably intense. You just feel like you just can't even take it anymore. And one of our acharyas, he describes Prema Bhakti as, it's like a combination of nectar and poison. It's nectar because it's so sweet, but it's poison because you can't survive. It's like, it's going to kill you. It's so powerful, it's going to kill you, but it's so delicious. It's like nectar, you can't get enough of it, you know. Prema Bhakti is described like that. It's like nectar and poison. So, because I was thinking in some of these other books, like Bhagavat, Chaitanya Bhagavat, and the pastimes are very, the descriptions are so sweet, and you get the kind of the rasa and the relationships between the devotees, and it's described in, like in how we would read like one of our favorite novels, and you know how it really gets into the detail of you know of the environment and what is said and what are they thinking and what happened just before, and sometimes when I read the CC, I feel like some of those details are glossed over, but then I realized this morning that is the reason why Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he went into the bhava in the beginning of CC so deeply, because what he wants us to do is when in the CC, you know, he says in one sentence, Lord Chaitanya lost consciousness, fell in, you know, just in prema bhakti and love, that lost consciousness just fell on the ground. And then Lord Chaitanya walked to this other holy place. It's like, wait, just like unpack that a little bit more, you know, like he had this rapture of prema bhakti and fell unconscious and fell on the ground, and then the next verse, then he went to this temple. I was like, wait, that's not good enough, you know, let's keep on going, you know, like I want to hear more about this, right? But then I realized that's what we need to do, is we need to apply that understanding, that bhav, that mood, that of the bhakti, that bhakti rasa, prema bhakti rasa, that's scientifically explained in great detail in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita to every one of these episodes and these leelas that we're reading through the CC. So, going back to the verse here, or I should not say going back to the verse here, I have not really talked about the content of these verses, but essentially we're talking about the various expansions of the Lord, which are unlimited and actually quite detailed. When you read the descriptions of the Lord in the the different categories and the forms and the different, contexts of these different forms of the Lord and the varieties of the forms, it's quite extensive. Rupa Goswami in Lagu Bhagavatamrita, he explains in very great detail all these, you know, different categories of vilas and how, you know, you have Krishna, Swayam Rupa, which is Krishna, Samashama Sundar, and Gokul, Goloka, Vrindavan. And then the nuances of all these expansions, like for us, when we read about the Rasa Lila, and Krishna expanded himself into 16,108 times, we're thinking, yeah, that's Krishna expanding into 16,108 times. But that distinction is called out in the Bhagavatamrita, that this is actually vilas, that prakash. Prakash means it's non-different, but when Krishna expands himself into 16,108, it's actually Swayam Rupa, and be turning into prakash, the prakash, which is the non-different form of the Lord. And these distinctions you don't even consider. They scientifically, categorically explain all of the different varieties of these incarnations of the Lord. So you have Swayam Rupa, and then you have Prakash, and then you have the Tad Tad Ekatma Rupa, and then you have the... and then those two divisions within Tad Ekatma Rupa, you have the incarnations like Ram, right? And then you have the other... categorical, which is the Purusha avatars, like what we're talking about here, like the Vishnus, the Karala Lakshaya Vishnu, Kalava Lakshaya Vishnu, Chira Lakshaya Vishnu. And then you have another category, which is the Avesha, the Saktavesha avatars, which is the living entity with the full potency, and sometimes partial potency, of the Lord, so that they're fully empowered by the Lord. And it goes into great, great detail. And that actually is explained in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita also. So we understand that these Purusha incarnations, the Kara Lakshaya Vishnu, is the source of all of these universes. And then within each universe, you have Garbha Lakshaya Vishnu. And it's Garbha Lakshaya Vishnu who gives birth to Lord Brahma. Right? He's the Neva. And then Kshira Lakshaya Vishnu. Garbha Lakshaya Vishnu and Kshira Lakshaya Vishnu are both staying within the universe. And Kshira Lakshaya Vishnu expands himself as the Paramatma in everyone's heart. And also resides in Svetadvip within the universe. So, another thought I was thinking about this morning, just reflecting on, is I was actually reading this morning about Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. I believe it was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. I was reading a conversation with him and his son-in-law, I believe. And he was giving so many shastric evidences that Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it's very convincing, you know. And it's authoritative, you know. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, I recently heard the example that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, it was actually Gauravani's invocation at the Radha Deshmelas. He was explaining how Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is like Shakespeare University. That was a good analogy. Like, you know, like, and Shakespeare himself teaching at Shakespeare University. So just imagine, like, going to Shakespeare University and Shakespeare himself teaching it. That's what Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, at the time, I mean, that was his position. How is it possible that these shastric evidences that Lord Chaitanya was the Supreme Personality of Godhead was so elusive to someone like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya? And I was thinking about that. What made me think about that was how is it possible? Because when I went to college, you know, a lot of my kind of friends were from India, or the country of origin was from India, and none of them actually had the understanding that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone felt like Vishnu was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so I was just meditating on how is this possible that it can be so scripturally, authoritatively proven and at the same time so elusive to so many people, like the majority of the people, right? Has that ever occurred to you? And, you know, if you mention it to someone who's not, you know, trained in our Gaudiya Vaishnava school, it's just common understanding that Krishna is not, like, when I mentioned it to some of my dorm mates when I was in college, they're like, it's like, where are you getting this from? You know, Krishna is just, you know, he's just an avatar of Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu is the greatest. So that started making me think that our acharyas actually explain how one of the sweetnesses of bhakti is it's like the confidentiality. It's like when you have a love affair, when there's a love affair so intense like Radha and Krishna, because the nature of that love is so pure and pristine that it needs to remain confidential. Right? So that's the confidentiality. But at the same time, Lord Chaitanya, he came to kind of break open the storehouse, the treasure chest of love of God, to give it to everyone, right? So it's a contradiction. So on the one hand, it's so confidential. It's so pristine and pure. And simultaneously, it's Lord Chaitanya is, you know, opening that storehouse to every single living entity, what to speak of humans, right? In Jaikan forest, Lord Chaitanya is giving prema bhakti to tigers and deers and all these and the different forms of life, other than humans. So, I was just meditating on this contradiction of it being so confidential, and yet it's being through ISKCON, spreading all over the world. Yet at the same time, even today, if you go to India, it's still so elusive. You know, this Krishna Prema Bhakti, right? And so I realized that this is because Krishna, he respects our free will. Right? Ye yathama prabandhante vasate. What is it? Ye yathama prabandhante tamsate vabhachamiham. Mamavartman vartante nusha partha sarvasha. That even though it's an open secret, Lord Chaitanya, Radha Krishna Nahi Anya, is Radha Krishna combined. It's an open secret. It remains so elusive because of maybe our conceptions of what we're attached to, our relationship, where we are in our own spiritual life, our ability to receive, to understand, to accept preconceived ideas, all these different things. So even though it's like it's right underneath your nose, you know that, of course, that famous story of that the man who inherited such a great wealth, and he would travel all over the world, and then the treasure was in his backyard. Another example I heard about that was what was it? Somebody whose breath smells, whatever. Everybody around them can smell it except for you. it's like, or if like you take some. Oh, I think the example I heard was you take some rotten cheese, and like you scrape it, and then you put it right here, and you're like, God, it stinks, you know. Rotten cheese. It's like, let me go outside, get some fresh air. So you go outside. get some fresh air. Like, it stinks out here too. And then you go and say, okay, let me go into like this rose garden. It stinks here too. It's like wherever you go, it's like it stinks everywhere. and then you never realize because it's you're stinking. You stink. That's why. So in the same way, it's an open secret. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. It's proven. If you read the proofs of our acharyas, it is indisputable. You just have to read it, and there's no argument. Yet, at the same time, it's so elusive. And then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and actually, that's the story of the story of the pundit, I forget his name, who spoke 100 verses on the Ganges, and Lord Chaitanya was just a childhood. Digvijaya Pandit, yeah. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Digvijaya Pandit, he's so qualified. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he's so qualified, yet is so elusive even to them. Right? And you notice both of them came around to that realization that Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of God, Radha Krishna Nahi Anya. But it took, there was an element of humility, of pride, that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had that pride, right? The Digvijaya Pandit had that pride. But Lord Chaitanya so expertly dealt with both of them that he was able to remove that pride like an expert surgeon, without crushing their sense of worth and their sense of honor and dignity, right? I mean, when someone takes away your dignity, it's like that's like the worst. Someone just you know, just everybody, even like the most poor person, has some sense of dignity, right? So Lord Chaitanya so expertly dealt with the Digvijay Pandit, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He listened to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya for 7 days without speaking a word. And he had to listen to all this nonsense, right? That conquered his heart. Think about it, right? If someone listened to you all day, 12 hours a day, for 7 days, it touches your heart. You're like, okay, well, this person really values what I'm trying to say, right? And with Digvijay Pandit, the same thing. And he said, oh, no, you must be tired or whatever. Just go back, rest a little bit. You're a great scholar. I'm just a little schoolboy, you know. Who am I? You know, just don't worry about it. Just go home. You just had a bad day today, right? And then he went home and he went to sleep. And then in the morning, it dawned on him, right? So they had this awakening by Lord Chaitanya's mercy that of just letting go of that pride, right? That's preventing us from seeing what's right before us. And I think it's instructive in, as a preaching movement, it's instructive in how we should be actually, you know, dealing with others who are not as fortunate, perhaps, as we are, and could be a contact with Krishna consciousness. That we should always be respectful and respect the dignity of everyone. And when we do that, in a very sensitive way, very loving way, instead of beating them over the head, you know, saying, you know, my way or the highway, you know, then we can actually collect the hearts. As I heard once recently, not too recently actually, we should be collecting hearts. That's what we are. We're in the business of collecting hearts. That's what Lord Chaitanya did. He just traveled everywhere. He traveled the South Indian tour. All he did was collecting people's hearts. And so when we can do that, we can create that receptivity. It's not that they have to be receptive. We can create that receptivity by Lord Chaitanya's mercy, where they can actually receive this highest and most amazing gift that we have received from Srila Prabhupada and our previous acharyas, and ultimately Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chai, thank you so much. We can open it up for any discussion topics, please.
Demigod
worshippers.
More than that. Yeah. You know, that's true. The scriptures are here. Yeah. Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, everything. But yet.
Good point, yeah.
You know, even more than that. So, what do you think is what's the cause of this? And we have a lot of work to do, but how can you explain that?
Yeah, like, man, I think it's. I covered it. Just think. People are not ready, you know, to hear. Or, and this is the perspective we should have, that we are not doing our job. And Prabhupada gave us a mission, and we're not doing it properly. That's why. That's the problem. And we can blame it. I mean, you know, I'm at fault too. We can blame everybody else. Like, gosh, I can't believe the demigod worshippers that believe that, you know, they don't understand Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But really, we should take it to heart, saying, hey, this is my, you know, I've been handed the baton by the previous acharyas. I'm not doing my job. That's the reason, right? Would you all agree? If that's our mentality and that's our mood, we'll make a lot of spiritual advancement. So, please.
Well, that's one reason, but also I guess because people are in so many different modes and intermixture of modes of nature. They are affected by different things. They are attracted by. They want false
result, and so they are attracted to those things. I worship Durga, Kali, or whatever, I get some quick result, I go for it, really, you know? I mean, yep. And maybe Krishna can wait for when I get old, you know? Maybe that's how they're thinking. And of course, in India itself, you know, it's a struggle with so many people, you know, so people, you know, they want some quick rupees, you know, so
you're correct.
Try to, you know,
I mean, you are correct. However, that is not the standard that Lord Nityananda followed in Haridas Thakur. But you are correct. You're absolutely correct. But Lord Nityananda doesn't agree with you. He went to anyone and everyone, whether they're qualified or not qualified, especially the ones that are not qualified. And he rolled in the dust, begging them with tears in their eyes, please chant the holy names. So, anyone else? Please.
Thank you for the beautiful class. I really appreciated the points on humility and how these great Goswamis really focused on their disqualification. Mm-hmm. And it's so incredible, such an incredible, incredible quality. So it's interesting because I just happened to be reading in Bhagavatam yesterday, 6th canto, about Ajamil. And it really struck me what Prabhupada says. I pulled the purport. I'll read a few sentences. And it's along the same line of humility. So Ajamil is condemning himself because he realized how fallen he was for all the sinful activities he performed. And Prabhupada said, this is the mentality of one who is becoming a pure devotee.
Wow.
When one is elevated to the platform of devotional service by the grace of the Lord and the spiritual master, one first regrets his past sinful activities. This helps one advance in spiritual life. The Vishnudutas had given Ajamil the chance to become a pure devotee, and the duty of a pure devotee is to regret his past sinful activities in illicit sex, intoxication, meat-eating, and gambling. Not only should one give up his past bad habits, but he must always regret his past sinful acts. This is the standard of pure devotion. So that struck me so much, that purport, because Prabhupada is so expertly instructing us in the consciousness and the duty to remember our mistakes, and that helps us progress in devotion.
Yeah, and my Guru Maharaj actually says that you gotta take it one step further. And he said, Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, they had no fault. Yet, they were so excited to see those faults as faults. Like, they, like I mentioned before, they, the only intention they had to serving the Mlecha kings at the time was to protect the people that are following Sanatana Dharma. But then when they were approached by the associates of Lord Chaitanya, they presented themselves as that we are lower than Jagai Madai because we served people like Jagai Madai, which makes us lower than Jagai Madai. So they were finding faults when none existed. So that's like, what you're saying is beautiful, but you can even go further with that and identify faults within yourself that don't even exist and magnify them.
Thank you. So it's the duty of a devotee to regret his past faults. And we were talking about the qualification to create receptivity in devotees, in people in general. Lord Nityananda, like you were saying, he had unlimited capacity to create that receptivity in anyone and everyone. Someone like me, at some point I might have to, at some point, agree to disagree and walk away before I get into an argument or a fight. But one way to actually increase our capacity to create receptivity is by regretting our past faults. You see so many times, if you want to convince people to give up drug addiction, who do they have and come to talk to them? Someone who's never done drugs? No. It's always someone who has overcome that past habit. So those, I just saw a connection between those two points that actually by understanding our fallen nature, we can admit that and regret that, and that is a kind of preaching, in a way.
Wow.
Because we found something better, we found something higher than what we had.
I've never thought about that. That's a brilliant point. That's a really, really good point. That's a really good point. Thank you. That makes a lot of sense. That's really, really amazing. Then another thing I thought of is that the more we can repent and realize where we came from, the more grateful we can be, right? If we come from a place of entitlement, it limits our ability to be grateful, right? But for Jagan Madhai and they were so grateful because they were so undeserving. They felt themselves so undeserving, right? And so I think they go hand in hand. You know, just the more we realize of how disqualified we are, the more grateful we can be. And the more grateful we can be, the more service attitude we can include in our life, and that we want to pay back, and that we want to do something. Because, so it's not like, you know, sometimes psychologists will say, don't meditate on to the negative in you and whatever. But if you meditate, if you meditate in the sense that you repent and you just regret, you know, doing those things, which can bring us to a state of gratitude, and that gratitude can propel us to wanting to serve. So, like, the more grateful we are, the more we want to serve, right? Like, if you're so grateful that you receive something, to that extent, you want to give back so much more, right? So I think that's a really great point. That's a really, really great point. That if we can really take inventory, like Bhaktitirtha Swami would really, you know, he would really emphasize taking personal inventory. It's like proactively doing it. I think I even heard Bhaktitirtha Maharaj would say, you know, you go around the room and with a pen and paper saying, what can I improve on? Like, you know, most people, like, when someone criticizes you, like, what are you talking about? You know, like, you get defensive, but Bhaktivedanta Maharaj is like, no, get a pen and paper, go around the room, say, what can I improve on? Like, give it to me, I want to hear it. So, and when we take that inventory and really take it to heart, we can be so much more grateful. You know, like, look, you know what? I don't deserve this. I do not deserve this. This is just causeless mercy. I'm so grateful. And then in that mood, we can actually serve. We can actually be an instrument of the Lord's compassion. I'm sorry, I shouldn't actually speak after you, because what you said was so eloquent and beautiful that I just felt like we should just end it right there. But I just have to say that. So thank you. Okay, it's getting late. Gantaraj, Sri Tanya Charitamrita Ki. Jai. I'll go to some of the devotees.